Welcome to Movie Dudes, episode 164. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Hey.
We got a little bit of a sci-fi theme going this week. Once again, I'm horrible movie critic here, and I did not go see the big new movie. I'm not going to see any fucking movie. But Chris, he's holding down the fort. And of course he is, because he's a big Star Wars fan. He went to go see Solo, A Star Wars Story. Is that the right title?
Yes. It's okay. A mouthful. Yeah, I went to go see Solo, A Star Wars Story, directed by Ron Howard, who came on to the project rather late. In fact, they had already been filming with, I think it's Phil Lord and Christopher Miller, who did the 21 Jump Street. Movies and
Lego movie.
Yeah, they're more comedic directors. There were some creative differences, and they were fired from the movie, and Howard was brought on to kind of save it to make this 8th of May 25th, I think, was when it came out.
Yep.
It is the I guess we could call it an origin story. I mean, it kind of is for Han Solo, a legendary character played by Harrison Ford, not played by Harrison Ford here, played by a newcomer, Alden Ehrenreich. He was in the Coen brothers movie, Hail Caesar. I did not see it, so
I don't. Me either.
Yeah, word was that the guy couldn't act coming into this, so that's a little scary. I was looking forward to it because it was a Star Wars movie. As we got closer to it, I was getting more and more excited, and turns out it's pretty good. It's a good, fun adventure film.
I knew you liked it. I saw you say as much. I wasn't sure how much you liked it or why. And then I'm not surprised you like it. You're a Star Wars fan, so.
Yeah.
But then again, there's the Star Wars fans that are hateful and upset about everything lately.
There's a weird split right now in the fandom of Star Wars. There are some that are just absolutely hating on Disney since they took over, to the point where they want George Lucas to regain control, which is funny because these are probably the same people that were calling for him to give up control of Star Wars back when the prequels released. There's a very bitter angry group of fans.
I mean, I think if you did a Venn diagram between them and men's rights activists, there you'd get like a perfect circle.
I agree.
Unless I'm wrong. Yeah, it seems like these are very like bitter, angry people who are upset mainly for like political reasons about this like shit. Like,
so, and not to get off the review too much here, but I did watch. I watched a YouTube video before the movie came out, where this guy was like asking for he wasn't asking, but he was basically advocating for fans to boycott because Disney has inserted all sorts of politics into Star Wars, which is kind of an absurd commentary.
It's very absurd, I think, but go ahead.
Right. But being as Star Wars has always been about social justice in a way, it's like a rebellion fighting against the man, the empire. But neither here nor there, these guys are pretty like, and you were talking about this Venn diagram of these rights activists and Trump people. This guy's, he was like, let's make Star Wars great again. He was running with the fucking Trump slogan. And then somehow this guy came up in my YouTube feed again afterwards, and he's talking about how Solo bombed, and he did a MS Paint diagram of why this stuff is why it went bad, and how Disney's alienated all the fans, and by inserting gender politics and sexuality, and I don't know.
And I wonder why these guys can't get laid.
Right.
It's a little
And you
confusing.
know what? It's a fun fucking movie. Like, look, I understand people have issues with The Last Jedi, and I enjoy The Last Jedi a lot, but I understand where some people come at their criticisms of that movie. And I think we both had some criticisms of that movie as well when we reviewed it. This is just a pure fun action, Star Wars action movie. Like it just is. It's spaceships flying around. It's fucking Han and Chewbacca, and very quickly, the movie starts and it introduces Han as this kind of scoundrel who is r running with a gang, and him and his girlfriend Kira, they're trying to get off planet, and they come up with a heist. He doesn't feel like Han Solo at that point. It's not until he meets up with Chewbacca, maybe 20 minutes or so in, that it really solidifies. These two have some chemistry, they work well, and you totally forget that it's not Harrison Ford playing that character. Like, he just sinks into the role of it, and it starts to work. Like, it's a fun movie from that point on out. And then once Donald Glover shows up, it's a blast. The guy embodies Lando Calrissian. Like, you never question that he is that character ever the entire time. Like, he is perfect with it. Yes, this explores stuff that we've heard about in previous movies. It explores Han meeting Chewie for the first time. It explores the Kessel Run. There's a lot of Easter eggs and stuff. So it's stuff that you've heard about before, and now it's just kind of solidified in live action. And it suffers from what a lot of prequels suffer from, and that's the stakes are not high
They're
for,
limited.
right? Because you know where the
Has to
primary
live.
members are going to end up, because Han dies in episode 7. And Lando pilots the Falcon in Return of the Jedi, and Chewie's still alive as of the end of The Last Jedi. And so, the main characters, you know that they're going to make it through. So that's a problem with it. But as far as it just being a fun action movie, it is. It's enjoyable.
I'm interested to see it at some point, but I've listened to a lot of reviews, and a lot of what I've heard in the reviews, both positive and negative reviews, makes me think that I'm gonna be disappointed in this. Like, yeah, you think it's fun, and I'm sure I'll probably walk away going, it's fun,
Yeah.
but the things I've heard, and you kind of touched on this a little bit, is it's like, instead of just doing a fun heist story like about Solo when he's younger, it acts as like an origin story, and it seeks to like explain every little thing that might have been mentioned in a one line throwaway line in the older Star Wars movies. Like, they're gonna turn that into the plot instead of just going like, hey, let's do something different and not have to. Like, I heard there's a lot of like, this is how Han Solo got his name, this is how Chewie got his nickname, like,
Yeah, well,
and
yes.
here's the dice, and here's, like, so many, like you said, like Easter egg type things.
Oh, it's like, and if you know anything about Star Wars history outside of the films, it's overflowing with, and it's a ton of fun for me, because yep, I know that. And people are some people are just going to be it's going to go right over their heads, but it's there's stuff Lando says that ties back to the original novels that were like, there's a Lando Calrissian series that came out in the early 80s. I think right after Return of the Jedi. Like, he mentions stuff there, and like there's items that are seen that are from like book covers and stuff. Like, but yes, like there are major references pulled, like the Kessel Run and how Han won the Falcon. Like, why comments there back and forth.
I guess, like, yeah, what I'm saying is, like, why does that have to, like, why do we need every little thing, like, that we know from the later movies explained, and why can't it just be, like, a fun adventure that is, like, I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen it yet, so I'm sitting here, like, just pontificating about something I haven't seen yet, but, you know, I listened to, like, what a lot of people had to say about it, and it's, like, me personally, I'd rather just see a one-off movie that, like, yeah, it's cool. It's a Han Solo when he's younger, before any of the shit from the movies. Like, here's an adventure that, like, here's one of the crazy things he did. And another thing I heard is that he like there's a part where they're like, "You're the good guy," and like he does the right thing, and it's like, why couldn't he just be the scoundrel, like a kind of like a like an opportunist in this, and like true to like how we know him at the beginning of Star Wars. And that we still like him. Like, why does he have to do the right thing for the fucking whatever? Like,
Well, I think if you look and explore Han's character, yes, that there is that line. Kira, Emilia Clarke's character, she does tell him that, like, he's not a he wants to be like this bad gangster guy that has no conscience. And I mean, that's not him. That's also not Chewbacca. Like Chewbacca is very big on loyalty and honor. Like, so, Han has this like edge of being a kind of a dirtbag, but he never is. Like, I mean, and that's
yeah,
been
at the
his,
end of the day, like, yeah, but dude, at, when we
that's
first meet him, it's
always.
like his backstory when we first meet him was he's like this guy who'll do whatever like to help himself out, and he decides to join to help the rebels because he sees like, all right, what they're doing is fucking important. I guess I'll, you know, at the end of the day, I'll be the good guy. But like all up until then, he's kind of like, how am I gonna make some money? Like that's kind of like how I got like Tika's character at the beginning of 1977 Star Wars, you know? So I don't know.
Sure. I mean,
It's
I
hard
just think, like, looking at his character over time, like, he's always kind of this.
plays it off like one way.
He always starts out trying to do, like, be out for himself, but ultimately he always ends up choosing other people over himself. You look at, Star Wars, he ends up coming back for Luke in the end, even though, like, oh, I'm all about the money or whatever. And then even in Empire, he's leaving the rebellion before the attack on Hoth to go and pay off his debts, like, and like Leia almost feels betrayed by it, and he ends up like saving her, making sure that she gets out of there, and that's what ultimately ends up with him being captured on Hoth on a Cloud City. And then in The Force Awakens, like, it's almost a complete reversal of everything, where he's back running around with Chewie, skirting his responsibilities to staying away from his wife because he's ashamed of what happened with his son. So he runs this like cyclical structure. I do get what you're saying. I don't think it hurts the film any for.
I just think it would be more cool and daring if in this one he really was out for himself. Like, it's before he saw the light or whatever, you know, before he realized, hey, maybe I am a good guy or whatever, you know, like.
But also, this is a Disney movie. It's
Hey man, Rogue
ultimately
One was a
it's
Disney movie, and fucking motherfuckers died at the end. Like the whole fucking everyone died. Like I don't know, you could do like
yeah, but you're not gonna turn somebody
ambiguous.
you're not gonna do ambiguous with a known character like that. I don't think they're gonna take risks. And maybe like that's a problem with the fact that they picked Han Solo. I think it'll be a problem with like fans are insane and they want like this Obi-Wan Kenobi movie. Like, I think that might be the most boring thing that could possibly happen in the series, but I don't think there is that like expansion there. Like, it would be nice for them to explore that. And I think Lando is more that character.
Lando, would you like a Lando movie?
I think that that would be very enjoyable. And he is that guy. He's not the always trying to like he is always out for himself.
One thing I thought of when you were mentioning Emilia Clarke is I heard she's terrible.
I
I heard
didn't.
she's like very dead-eyed and wooden, and I mean, that would not surprise me based on I know her from basically Game of Thrones, and she's fine in that, but anything else I've seen her in, I haven't been like, yeah,
I mean,
great. Like,
she's not gonna blow you out of it, but I like her character. It's not this emotional performance, but it's also somebody that has been basically like in servitude all of her life. And at the end, like you see why she might be a little wooden with Han the entire time by the end of the movie because of decisions that she ultimately makes. She's kind of that character that you want Han to be. Because she's certainly not the good guy.
I have a sense of like what type of character she is, but yeah, I just heard she's just not very like I heard everyone's greatness. Like I heard Woody Harrelson is amazing, and I just heard that she was like a really weak link, and she's also very integral to the plot.
I mean, she is definitely a tie. Like, she's the reason Han is doing a lot of what he's doing at the beginning of the movie. But ultimately, like, his decisions lead him down this path. You could probably lose her and it would be fine. But I wasn't like hurt by her. And I like the character. I think that it creates some interesting possibilities.
I've got a lot of questions because I haven't seen it. One thing I have not heard a lot of people talk about is the action in it. I remember seeing in the trailer there's like a part that looks like an action scene on a train. Is there like a, is that in that in the
Yes.
movie? Okay,
Yeah,
how is that? It looked pretty
there's a
cool in
train
the
heist.
trailer.
The train heist is fun. Tandy Newton is in that portion of it that takes place pretty early on. But yeah, the train heist is fun. Like it's this weird kind of dual-sided train where there's a train on top of the tracks and on the bottom of the tracks. And
Yeah, I just remember like a glimpse of it in the trailer being like, oh, that looks pretty fucking
yeah,
neat. Like that whole part.
it looks cool. It's fun. Woody Harrelson is pretty good in that part. So is Chewbacca. That entire segment there is pretty solid. Yeah, the action's good. Like I think that might be the high point of the action, but it's pretty steady throughout. Like there's more blaster battles and there's another heist. So there's multiple heists in this movie. That's one. And then there is the second heist that involves the Kessel Run, where they have to break into kind of like another facility and steal some stuff, which is also fun. It's not crazy action, like it's nothing like Rogue One, like the war type scenes going on there. But it's a much smaller story too. Like that involved the entire Rebel Armada at the end of it. So this involves like six people. So
I guess I have like probably two more questions, and I'll let you finish your review. Stop interrupting. Did you find like at your screening, was it like did the film look dark? Because I've heard a lot of complaints that it's like the lighting in it is like really dark, and a lot of theaters are not like capable of fucking properly screening this movie.
So I've seen it twice, on two different screens. The first time I saw it on IMAX, it is dim. It is a much like much darker toned movie, like color palette wise, for a lot of it. Like the opening scenes on Corellia, Han's home planet is very gray and muted. It's but I didn't find it unviewable, like in either screening. It
Okay.
does it is a darker film, like in terms of color palette though, so
I wonder if it'll look different though, like when you see it on Blu-ray or whatever, you know what I mean? Like
yeah, where you can kind of adjust and pop the contrast on stuff and
I guess the other thing, this is just like a weird hypothetical. I like would you I've rather seen the Lord Miller solo, or do you think that like they made the right decision, and you think like Ron Howard is like you got the version that you wanted out of Ron Howard?
I think that this is a good movie. What I've heard, so I would love to see what Lord Miller's version was.
Just out of curiosity, like
Yeah,
yeah.
but what I've heard of it is that it was a nightmare. They basically wanted the cast to improv their way through every scene. And only Donald Glover has like actual improv experience. So, like, seeing like shoots were going 12, 13, 14 hours, way over what they should have been going. And stuff just was not going well, evidently. And also, like, it was, you know, pissing off Kathleen Kennedy, one, because they're over. The one thing I read was like this one guy who was working on the crew said, like, you know, at the time under Lord and Miller, like he was getting tons of overtime. And then Ron Howard came on and he righted that ship real quick and got it back on to like, you know, a set schedule, and they hit their timing marks and their filming marks. But it also like pissed off, you know, Lawrence Kasdan, the writer, who was there as a
He's like, I
producer
gave
on the
you a
scene.
script.
Yeah, I'm like, and I mean, you know, Lawrence Kasdan is kind of,
big deal.
yeah, like you don't ask that dude to write a script and then
And do
basically
improv.
shit all over it. Yeah, like I think that they made a mistake hiring Lord and Miller, and I would have liked to have seen what they would have done with it, but I also think that if that film had ultimately come out, it would have been a nightmare.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I do think though that what they would have done would have been interesting at the very least. Like, I would love to have
Sure.
seen what it would have been. I do think Ron Howard is a very capable director, though.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason that they brought him on, like, to 'cause, look, he has made some excellent movies, but for the most part, he makes serviceable, watchable films. Most of the time, he's not going to blow your mind, but.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a movie of his here and there that I like really liked, but then I also like I remember I really liked Cinderella Man, which I think he did. And if I'm wrong, there's no point in saying this, but
Yeah,
like
he did. He directed Cinderella.
I really liked it and I can't remember it. So
Yeah, I mean, there are ones that very much stick out for me from him. Apollo 13, Willow, which he did as well. But recently, I mean, fuck, I don't know. Like, I know he did like Inferno and Angels and Demons and The Da Vinci Code. I can't tell you a single. Like, I know the plots of those movies because I read the books, but they don't stick out to me. Like, they're perfectly watchable, I guess, but.
yeah, it's weird, almost weird to like call him like a journeyman, but that's kind of how he like. He just feels like he's hey, if you want a Hollywood ass movie, Ron Howard's your guy. He'll do it, but
Yeah.
like he's not gonna inject a whole lot of personality. It's not gonna be super memorable. Oh, and I honestly, like, I. Maybe I was too young when I saw it or whatever. I didn't like Apollo 13 when it came out. So I don't know.
That's fair.
Anyways, we're going on about this way too long, and I've kind of just been interviewing you about it. Like, all right, so tell us, man, what's your statement on fucking Solo, A Star Wars Story?
It's a really good, really fun movie. I really liked it coming out the first time. I had a huge smile on my face, which I haven't had since The Force Awakens. Like, I really liked Rogue One, and I also really liked The Last Jedi, but this was just pure fun. Like, it was just like, yes, this was fucking, it was a Star Wars adventure, is kind of what I've always wanted since I was a kid. Like, just being able to go to the movies and see, these characters on screen doing cool shit. I don't think it's gonna blow people's socks off, but it's just damn fun. Like,
But for what it's worth, you think it's a great time at the movies.
I had a blast both times. And like, I still have a movie pass use that I can use on it. So if I find time, I may go see it a third time.
All right. Verdict.
Four stars.
All We'll have a more in-depth conversation. Well, I mean, that was pretty in-depth, but we'll talk about it again when I see it.
When you get to see it, we can touch on it.
I do know the cameo, so I'm not. That's the thing is, like, there's a couple movies lately where I kind of like have listened to all these podcasts. I know everything going in. Like, I know in Infinity War who's gonna die. I know who shows up in this. So I'm gonna have some of the surprises like stolen from me.
And that's a shame that that got
It's my
stolen
fault.
from
It's
you.
my fault. It's
Yeah,
my I didn't
sure.
mean it.
It
It's
just,
not like I opened Twitter and someone said the
yeah.
spoiler. I saw the answers.
Because I mean, granted, I saw it at 10 a.m. the day it came out, so like that stuff hadn't really leaked out there yet, and I didn't do a lot of listening, but I was like, holy shit, that's fucking
Yeah,
awesome.
and I don't want to say it here, but like I it's awesome because I like that character. Like, I think that character's like really cool, like one of the coolest in the whole franchise, but like I have problems with that too.
All right, we could talk about that off air. So,
It's just like, okay, all right.
it
Anyways,
it's yes, there there's yes, we'll discuss that later.
it is neat though, just because I mean it's a neat thing, but enough of that. Chris highly recommends Solo. Moving along to our other big movie of the week is one of the supposedly best films of the year. Like, a lot of critics were saying that early on. I think this came out like in January.
Yeah, it was pretty early.
You and I have been waiting on it. We thought it was going to come out on Netflix. It didn't. I've been very excited to see it. The film is Annihilation. It's the new film from Alex Garland, whose 2015 film Ex Machina was one of my favorite films of that year. I think it's one of the better sci-fi films of the last decade or two. So I went into this with pretty high expectations, especially based on some of the critics that I follow. Like, there's critics I know that like went and saw this like fucking seven times in the theater, which is like, I'm amazed you're able to find it once in the theater because this thing was like barely released. But the basic setup is Natalie Portman is a biologist who joins a team heading into this thing that the government is calling a shimmer, which is like this area that looks like it's surrounded by a bubble, and everyone they've sent into it has basically not come out. So she goes in there with like other scientists and stuff to like try to figure out what is going on in this thing before it spreads and takes over the whole world and everyone goes missing and dies or whatever. It's kind of the basic setup. There's a little more to it. Like, her husband is a soldier who went into this thing like a year ago, and at the opening of the film, like, she has not seen or heard from him. For all she knows, he's dead. He kind of shows up and he's not doing so well. It's kind of like the basic setup. Did I get it right, or
Yeah.
it might sound a little muddy or hard to figure out, but if that was hard for you to figure out, good luck watching this movie.
The film's a little muddy and hard to figure out.
Yeah, so like I guess right off the bat, what I would say about it, like my initial reaction when I saw it last night, I went to Twitter and I was like, I think I understood 89% of it, and I 100% actually understand why Paramount was afraid of this movie, like why they were not confident in it. Because, and this is just my opinion, we'll see what you think, but like I think the movie is too challenging for a general audience. Like, there's no way that, despite the fact that like there's a good chunk of this movie that's just kind of like cool, fun shit and like monster movie type shit, that the movie itself, in terms of plotting and what it's trying to talk about, is, I think it's a little too challenging. Like, it was a movie that when I finished it, I went to YouTube and I looked up the ending of Annihilation Explained, and I was basically right. Like, everything I thought was correct, but it helped. One, confirmed that I was right, and two, it like filled out a few other things that like I was like, wait, why that? Why this? Why that? So it's kind of all right. But my initial, to open this conversation up about it is, I liked the movie. I did not like it as much as critics led me to believe I would like it, and I also think that it's a hard recommend to just anybody. Whereas, like, I felt like Ex Machina is a really strong sci-fi movie that I could recommend to people. And even more, and we'll get into this maybe a little bit, but I think that really great sci-fi has something to say about who we are as people. And I think Ex Machina like raises good questions about like what makes a human, like is consciousness it, like whatever, And then this movie, I think it tries to do some things, but it's kind of barely there, and then you're just kind of left with the puzzle box of what you're figuring out. But I've talked too much, Chris. Tell me about what you thought of Annihilation.
It's slow. It's plotting. There are really cool moments. There is a like this creepy ass like alligator type thing and a awesome terrifying bear thing that captures its kills and can talk with its voice and there's some really cool imagery, and so I can't think of the actress's name, but one of the scientists that's with them, she starts kind of morphing into a plant at one point, and it's like you just see like just you see
Where
the
it's like
plant kind of
growing out of her arm.
yeah, and like out of her like back and neck, and it's like as she's walking away, like more and more of her is being taken over. Like the imagery in this film is phenomenal. It just takes so long to kind of get where you're going, and I didn't care about the primary, which is Natalie Portman's Lena. Like she doesn't make me care about her, and I don't care about her relationship with Oscar Isaac, her husband, Kane, which is what ultimately leads her into the Shimmer. I didn't care about any of the characters. Like I wanted to know what the mystery was, but I just didn't care.
I think it's a problem.
Which leads me to the end, and it's like that was cool, but it's just kind of like this image, like very beautiful imagery, very well shot imagery, and then like kind of this weird trippy ending, that I was like, okay, like it's good, but it's not this like mind blowing. At least for me, I wasn't like blown away by it, and I was like, yeah, that's. It's a good okay kind of sci-fi story. But yes, I think you're right though. Ex Machina had this like kind of overarching premise and exploration of humanity and AI, and this was more of like life and death and the circular nature of things.
I think that, like, yeah, like
It's
in
more
Ex Machina,
philosophical.
yes, like in Ex Machina or a lot of other great sci-fi, I'm fully engaged in the emotional story. On top of like the cool ideas that it has,
Yeah.
and this movie is so top-heavy with the philosophical shit, which is cool. Like, it's interesting stuff, but also it's not really applicable. Like, everything that we like, when we figure out what is actually going on, it's not applicable in any meaningful way to my life or to like how the world works or really anything. I mean, it tries to, like, it's trying to make this point about how humans are self-destructive by nature and, how her affair, like, she. Natalie Portman had an affair with one of her colleagues before the events of this movie begin,
Yes.
right? And it's trying to like connect what's happening in the movie with what she did there in some sort of thematic way that's supposed to make us care on an emotional level about her journey and her husband's journey.
When
And
it's
I just don't connect. I didn't connect emotionally with this movie at all. Like, I was just like,
one, like the scenes of her having this affair,
weird. I
yeah, because they're interspersed throughout
yeah.
film, and when the film starts, like it seems like she is broken up over the fact that her husband has disappeared and he's not coming back, and then like I don't know, maybe 20 minutes in after the adventure has kind of started, like you realize that oh, she was sleeping with another dude, and they keep cutting back to that, and it took me a while to even realize that that was beforehand.
Yeah, I assumed it happened since he'd been missing,
Yeah, like she felt guilty about the fact that like maybe she was like, to me I thought that she was thinking about the fact that he came back and she had cheated on him, but she had thought he was dead. So like I was kind of confused by that up until like I was like, okay, the reason he went on his mission was because he knew about this affair.
That's it. And so, like, that's his self-destructive thing. And everyone, so the basic plot of this movie is a bunch of people go into a bubble, like this alien bubble, to figure out what the fuck's going on. And the emotional thing that, like, that we're supposed to connect to, like, the human element of the story is everyone who has gone on this journey has done so because they're self-destructive for some reason.
Yes.
And it to me, that just feels like another plot device, like another thing layered on. Like, the movie's so heavy with like its machinations and its fucking like what it's trying to do philosophically, and this and that. Like, it just feels like another philosophical layer. I didn't connect with any of it. I didn't buy what it's trying to say or anything, which sucks because like. There are cool things about it. Like the things that you said were cool and same things I'd say are cool. Like the creatures that you get to see when they go inside here, like some of like, there's a pretty cool scary scene with a bear. I think some parts near the end are kind of cool. I kind of had the movie figured out, to be honest. Like it didn't throw me for a loop like I think it thought it was going to. It does so much talk early on about cellular biology and the way cells split and all that, that I kind of was calling some of the things that happened near the end. It's really weird, man, because this is one of those movies that was hyped to death by some critics, and when I finally saw it last night, I was just like, It's cool. I'm not gonna go. I'm not. I'm gonna like when we come down to the final verdict here, I'm gonna give it a positive score. But at the end of the day, I didn't connect with it anywhere near as much as Ex Machina. And yeah, I kind of am baffled. I guess there's things about it that are super ambitious. I kind of get that. But I think anything else that Alex Garland has done has been way better and more interesting. I wouldn't say more interesting, but way better than this. He stuck the landing more times than here, where I'm just like, it's not quite there, man, for me. I don't know.
And I do wonder if maybe that's from, and I full disclosure, I did not read the novel that this is based on. I wonder if like some of that just comes from the adaptation of what this book is, where the characters in that book don't even have names. Like Lena, Natalie Portman's character is just called the biologist. Dr. Ventress is just the psychologist. Like they're not even they don't e they weren't even like given names. Like so they are really just like these husks in the book from what I understand. Like I haven't read it, but I do wonder if maybe some of that like and he's just he tried to give it some characterization, but just not there.
Well, yeah, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. I think as a movie, this thing almost works. I think it's super interesting. I think that the mystery at the center of it is interesting enough. I kind of dug the ending, the final scene or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so it leaves things open for interpretation.
Yeah, and like I like. I mean, I take it at face value. I take what happened. Yeah, I know what you're saying with the eyes,
Yeah.
but I take what he says as at face value, where he's like, "I don't know, I don't think so," you know. And our understanding of it, I take at face value. I think it's cool, but I just again, it's slow. I didn't connect emotionally with it. I was mostly like, yeah, that's interesting ideas in there, and there's some cool scenes, but I wasn't ever fully in love with it like I was with a lot of movies I watched recently. Prisoners, Better Watch Out. As I was watching those movies, I was getting up out of my seat like, oh my God, I can't believe this is crazy. This was just, I'm like, yeah, super interesting. Bravo on thinking of some weird trippy ass shit,
Yeah.
but didn't care on a human level. So what's your verdict, Chris?
I'm gonna go with 3 stars here.
Okay.
I like it. I think the imagery is wonderful. I do think there are things to think about with it for sure. But in terms of like something that's going to draw you in with the characters, it's lacking on a large point.
I agree with you. I'm gonna give it a 4 because I do think it's above your average run-of-the-mill 3-star movie. But yeah, I think we both kind of felt the same way, it sounds like, from watching it. It was just like, yeah, it's good. I liked it, but I wish I liked it more. With Ex Machina, I think we were both super enthusiastic about that one, where it was just like, yeah, dude, you fucking nailed it. Or he wrote as well, 28 Days Later. We walk away from that movie, you're like, nailed it. You got it 100%. And this was just like, he hit a triple, I'd say. I don't know. It's not quite there. But yeah, I mean, I'm still recommending anyone who's a sci-fi fan to see it, but if you're not, it might be a bit much, and not it might not like the reward might not be there for you.
Actually, he wrote Sunshine too. I really like Sunshine.
Yeah, this guy's track record has been pretty stellar, and a lot of people would include this, and if I there's people that would say this is his best, and for me it's I think the least satisfying of any of his work. Take that as you will.
Yep.
I guess wrapping it up, I did want to mention the two movies that I had seen weeks ago and keep forgetting to talk about. And I'm not going to do full reviews on either of them. One because one of them is super short, and the other one because, again, it's been weeks since I've seen it, so like it's not super fresh in my memory. But I did watch a film called Your Name. It's an anime film from last year.
Okay.
It's the first anime film I've ever seen, so expanded my horizon with this one. It's basically these two teenage kids. One is a girl who like lives in like a rural area, and one is a like a teenage boy who lives in Tokyo. And she dreams of living in a big city, and one day she wakes up inside this boy's body. And basically, as the movie goes on, like they kind of realize that when they're both asleep, they kind of like swap bodies. Like he's entering her, she's entering him, and so it's like a body swap movie, you know, like Freaky Friday or something. But pretty inventive and heartfelt. It's charming and totally likable. Like if you watch this, I think you would enjoy it, Chris. Like I think most people that watch this movie, unless you have like a heart of stone, you're gonna like it. This is a pretty cool animated movie. And like once they like start to realize what's happening, like that they're switching bodies when they fall asleep, they're like this movie like actually thinks of things that they would do to like work around that. Like they leave notes for each other on their phones, like, hey, you did this and this, like while I was in you, I did this and this and this and this, you know? And so they could check their phone after and like figure out. And as it goes on, they in a way are kind of forming like a relationship with each other. But then the movie takes even stronger and wilder sci-fi twists as it gets near the end. Like there's more to this than just the body swap, and it's cool and it makes sense. The movie, I think, yeah, like it unlike Annihilation, which we just talked about, like this one gets you in the emotions by the end. And I really dug it by the end of it. So I'm gonna give it 4 stars.
Okay.
I strongly recommend it. Have you seen it?
No.
Okay. Yeah, I recommend it.
Nice.
The other movie I wanted to mention is on Shudder. It's called Primal Screen. It is a like 27-minute short documentary from Rodney Asher. Who he did Room 237 and The Nightmare, which we reviewed when it came out.
Okay.
So this guy's kind of like built a genre of like documentaries that are basically horror films. And this one is about people who have a fear of dolls. And it uses the movie Magic with Anthony Hopkins as kind of like a launching off point for like kind of all these people who were kids at the time that that movie came out, and they remember seeing the trailer for that, and the trailer for that is like a dummy, like facing the camera and talking to you in your living room, and it's a lot of people like recalling being like 5 years old and seeing the trailer for that and being like, you know, it really freaking them out and creeping them out, right?
Yes.
I think Rodney Asher is a master at creating like a vibe and like a sense of dread through what every other documentary uses, which is like talking head interviews with people. And he'll like cut those interviews to kind of like shots and imagery he took, and he'll set it to like just a creepy music. And his documentary is like, I don't know if you remember, but at least for me, like the nightmare really got under my skin.
Yes.
And by the end of this, and especially because it's so much creepy doll imagery that I was just like, oh, like I like dolls aren't necessarily a fear for me, but I was like so skeeved out by the end of it. I was like, ugh. So yeah, anyways, I really like this guy's movies. I think The Nightmare in Room 237 are available on Netflix. At least they used to be. And Primal Scream is definitely available on Shudder right now. He actually made
Nice.
it. He made it for Shudder. So if you have Shudder, it's not a reason to get Shudder. Like again, it's only a 27-minute short. But if you have Shudder, definitely check out Primal Scream by Rodney Ashner. It will probably creep you out, even though it's just a documentary of people talking about how dolls freak them out.
Okay.
So that's it for me this week, Chris. I don't know what I have for next week. I wanted to have Upgrade for you, but apparently that's not an option.
Your theater sucks.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, I don't know what I'll have either. Maybe Upgrade. I was also thinking about going to see Adrift.
Okay.
But we'll see. So.
I'm sure I'll come up with something, but if you do get to see Upgrade, I would love to hear about it. That movie just looks like, to me, it looks like fun. It also looks like the type of movie I've been asking for like a summer. Like, hey, whatever happened to just like fun action movies like that aren't based on a license? As far as I know, it's not based off of like a comic book or anything. I think it's just an original idea. At the very least, it's not a sequel to something or whatever. So it looks
That is true.
fun. Who knows? I'll have something next week.
Okay.
We will both. And yeah, come back next week.
Movie
Movie
dudes.
dudes. Do 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 do.